Hi, I'm Arya Dhanod from one of our beautiful rotation cities, which is Hyderabad, India. And my favorite movie is Avatar, followed closely by Dunkirk and Interstellar.
That's Arya Dhanod from M27. This week, we're diving deep into Arya's story on Humans of Minerva. Welcome to Humans of Minerva, a podcast which captures the interesting stories of humans at Minerva. I'm your host, Julia Ip, and today I'll be sitting down with Arya Dhanod from M27. Hi, Arya.
Hi, Julia.
Thanks for joining us today. So this one is a special episode because Arya is actually one of our newest hosts for M27. Thank you for joining us. So Arya, why don't you start with just telling us where you are currently, what your surroundings are like, where are you recording? Paint a picture for our audience.
Yeah, I'm currently based in San Francisco, which is a beautiful city. I live on Nob Hill, for anyone who has been in San Francisco, one of the beautiful neighborhoods right next to Chinatown. I have a lovely view of the ocean when I wake up every morning, which is about a 20-minute walk away. And the only slight disadvantage of living here is that I live on a very steep hill. And so anytime I go down to the center of the city, I have to come back and walk up a hill for about 20 solid minutes and then get to my room. So that is a pain, but it is worth it.
Okay, you'll develop really strong leg muscles in San Francisco this year. When I was in first year, we only had 1412, and that was definitely an experience. I did not have an ocean 20 minutes away. Did not have Chinatown right beside us. So glad that you're enjoying first year, it seems. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what inspired you to join as a host?
Yeah, I'm a very curious person. I ask a lot of questions, and I am the kind of person who wants to get to know someone else's entire life story within just a two-hour conversation over a coffee or over a lunch. And especially coming to Minerva, people have very, very interesting stories, and they've done remarkable things even before age 20. And so this is like an amazing avenue, not only for me to build my podcasting skills, but also to get to know my classmates, professors, and alumni much better.
And where do you think your curiosity comes from? Or where do you think your ability to ask provoking questions comes from?
I think a big influence has been, number one, family. As a child, me and my younger brother were always allowed to question the rules of the house, to ask our parents why we were doing something, when they would always be happy to respond, because nothing ventured, nothing gained. A question, however simple or however some might think stupid, always gives you like some new information. And so you're always better off after asking it. And I think number two, I was in the IB curriculum all my life, so grade 1 to 12. And the curriculum is based on curiosity, and it's more of a student-driven approach. So it's all about students researching and asking questions and conducting their own self-driven projects, going down rabbit holes, which they are interested in. And so I've always loved asking questions. My teachers have encouraged it. My family has encouraged it. I think I'm better off with this skill than without it. So yeah, happy to.
That's an awesome environment to grow up in. I know a lot of my friends, at least, and also me as well, it's like sometimes as a parent, you get so tired of answering questions. A lot of times, you know, the response is just, because I said so. So I'm glad that your parents were patient enough to give you an actual response. I think that's really important. Something that I also hope to do for my kids too, eventually, when I have kids in the far future. So let's dive more into how you grew up in Hyderabad and what it was like and what your family was like.
I love Hyderabad. It is a beautiful, bustling city filled with activity, constantly expanding both horizontally and vertically. It's the second biggest city for IT in India after Bangalore. And so a lot of young people from neighboring towns and villages come to the city to develop their skills, get an education, and then work here. So it's a very young and vibrant city, and there's always new malls, new shops, new restaurants, new cafes opening up. And so it's lovely to live there. I've always been a city boy. And it's hot and sunny, which I've gotten used to. And like, I do not think I could live in San Francisco long term because the winter here was harsh for me.
Oh, gosh. And you think the San Francisco winter is harsh? I'm in Canada. I'm from Toronto right now. So we have like actual winter, even though this winter, I have to say, is quite mild. But yeah, I remember my semester in Hyderabad. Unfortunately, that was also the semester when COVID hit. So we were evacuated like 3 months in. I know a lot of people enjoyed Hyderabad. I love the architecture there. And there's like a dosa shop right beside the res hall. So that was amazing as well. So hopefully your friends will get to experience it to its fullest.
As the local.
Yeah. And how about your family? So you mentioned you have a little brother. Tell me more about the love you grew up with and your household too.
I grew up in a very loving, supportive household. And so I grew up with my younger brother, my parents, and my dad's parents. So we live in a family of six. And I personally am very close to all four of my grandparents, honestly. And it's been lovely. I think like there's a famous saying that the grandparents and the grandchildren always team up against the parents. And so we are a team. It's us versus them. And over just three generations, we've come a very long way. We've come from a village in kind of the middle of nowhere to this big city in Hyderabad, and we're doing pretty well for ourselves. And so it's always amazing for me to hear how my grandpa grew up and how that was a different world and a different time.
That must be really special to be able to grow up with your grandparents around you as well. Do you have any favorite childhood memories?
I remember my birthdays being very special. And birthdays and celebrations are generally a big thing.
When's your birthday?
April 22nd.
April 22nd. Okay. Coming up. Has that happened yet? I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. And that will be my 18th birthday. So that's actually something special. I'm looking forward to it. And so, yeah, we just love to celebrate. It's part of the culture. And so my birthday would not be like a single day party. It would be a whole month party. So my mom would cook 30 of my favorite dishes, one per day. So I would give her a list at the beginning of the month and she would cook one each day. For my birthday,
we would have
multiple parties. So one would be with school friends, one would be with community friends, one with like my mom's family, one with my dad's family. So that was also amazing. And you feel very loved. And I would get like 50 phone calls on the actual day, which would be a little bit annoying. But again, you remind yourself that everybody is calling out of love and just to give you some good wishes. So I think family and like extended family and friends have been a huge part of my life. And like, I hold them very dear. Like it's a core value to me. And it's important that I stay very close to all of them, even if I'm living in a different location.
Okay. That's amazing. And I totally support celebrating your birthday for an entire month. I do this too. My birthday was actually on Monday. It was January 22nd.
Oh, okay.
So easy to remember, April 22nd. Same date. Same day.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you. But yes, I am on board with, I have like a birthday retreat I go on with my sister and then have the family birthday parties and then the friend birthday parties. Because why not? Why not celebrate? Celebrations are always
awesome.
Fun. So growing up, what kind of student were you?
I was a good student. I did well in school. But I have to say that school was just one of many things I was doing growing up. And my parents always encouraged me to do things beyond academics and go very much beyond, discover hobbies and passions. And so as a young child, all through like, let's say elementary, primary and middle school, I was enrolled in a lot of classes. So I did skating and I did swimming and basketball and chess and like drums, theater, a lot of different classes, and that's been lovely. These are all hobbies of mine, which relax and de-stress me. And this continued on till high school. I would not say there's a single year where academics totally took over my life and I was not doing other things. And then my middle and high school were a lot of creative writing was what I got into because I kind of had a talent for it. English has always been my favorite subject. And I got some really good mentors and teachers along the way. So sixth grade was when I wrote and published my first novel, which is called Clumsy Diaries. So, yeah.
Wait, sixth grade? That's insane. In sixth grade, you published your first novel. I'm trying to think of like what I was like in sixth grade. I was definitely not publishing novels. I think I was probably reading, like, trying to finish a book. So that's pretty amazing. What was Clumsy Diaries about?
I will give you a outline. I don't want to ruin too much of suspense, but it's basically the autobiography of an African wild dog who lives on the South African plains. And so going into an animal's mind, going through his autobiography from birth to death. And then I was a very imaginative 11-year-old. And so I also included a couple of chapters on what wild dog heaven looked like. And so that was pretty fun.
The proper chapter book. Like, there's multiple chapters to this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That seems like a very... Men. Yeah, that seems like a quite an imagination for an 11-year-old to have and be able to actually write. Like, I think I was still trying to read novels. Here you are writing novels on something that seems to be, like, a pretty interesting topic, too. Like, it's not just about your daily life. It's, like, imagine what's like on the African like plains. Like, that's pretty cool. So I also heard that you have also published multiple books and not just one, and your creative writing career, I guess, started when you're in sixth grade. Do you want to talk a little bit more about your other books as well?
Sure. I didn't plan this, but they all happened at intervals of 2 years. So sixth grade was the first novel. Second novel was in eighth grade. It is called 2051 Gen I, and it is a sci-fi novel where a 12-year-old boy called Milo kind of takes us through a day in his life, and then a week, and then a month. And through his eyes, we see how the world and humanity has changed in 2051. And so I kind of took a stab at how I visualized education in 2051 and transport in 2051. And so that was a very, very imaginative book. I didn't do a ton of research. It was not technical. It was very much a child's imagination running free. And so it actually became a beautiful, almost utopic society. And that was interesting because I personally have read a lot of sci-fi dystopias, but I think imagining a utopia is actually not such an easy thing to do. Like, how do you make that perfect world, and what is really perfect? That was fun. And then 10th grade, I wrote, and this is probably the one I'm most proud of and it's closest to my heart. I wrote a crime thriller, which is called Lost Causes. It is, I always struggle to give a summary of it because it's a very intense and packed book. But I guess very simply, it's the story of six teenage boys who live in a small town in Texas, and they're all Mexican immigrants. And it's about daily struggles of teenagers, struggles of an adolescent, and overcoming those struggles, maturing into adults. So it's very much a coming of age story, solving problems, having to be the adult in the family when your parents are having their own struggles. And yeah, going way beyond the town and out into the real world and pursuing the goals which they want to pursue.
And wow. So, those are like three very different books you're describing. I feel I'm just so amazed at how you're able to write three books within like, what, 6 years, four to six years? How did you find inspiration for these things? Because I feel like every book kind of has some truth to it, some part of yourself in it as well. But they seem like three very different books. So I'm just curious, like, how did you come up with these things and what inspired you to write these books?
Yeah, so the first, I've always been a voracious like reader, and I love movies and just consuming content. So a lot of my novels will have maybe a dialogue or a scene description which is inspired by some movie or book, which even I probably don't remember, but it's just there inside my brain. But more specifically, the first novel was inspired by a family vacation we took to South Africa in 2016. And so I actually started writing this book at the airport on the way back to India. But the vacation was amazing. It was 2 weeks in the wild, staying in a lodge and every day going for like 8 hours on safaris and seeing the whole African wildlife and the whole landscape. And yeah, for some reason, it was not the lions or the elephants or the leopards which caught my eye, but these tiny little African wild dogs, because they are tiny and they look small and weak and not intimidating. But when they work as a group, they are able to take down prey much larger than themselves. And they are very resilient and very bold. And so you see them hunting prey, which is much, much larger, 10 times larger than themselves. And they are very unafraid. And so they just caught my eye. I had a couple of beautiful sightings of them. For example, one time the whole pack just ran past our car. So from the distance, we saw them and they ran past us. And one time we saw them actually hunting a scrub hare. And so that inspired me to write the first novel. Second novel was, I think, a time when I was into a lot of sci-fi books and movies, Hunger Games and the Foundation series and Star Wars and everything. And so I was just curious as to what would, if I had to write the story of the Earth in 2051, what would that look like? And
why 2051?
I don't know. It just feels like a milestone year, the half of the century. And then for some reason, I didn't...
Plus one.
2050 just didn't sound good enough. So I said, let's do a plus one. So that became 2051. And that was a good enough time span also for me to be very imaginative, but also not go so far as 2100, which even I probably could not visualize. So that was why 2051. And Lost Causes was... So I was 14 years old. I had just entered the whole teenage phase. I was very much inspired by the people around me. So the characters as well, their struggles and their stories have inspiration from a lot of teenagers who like are my friends, my enemies. Who I go to school with and who I play basketball with in the evening. And so it was very much like by a teenager, about teenagers, for teenagers. And it's a very interesting point in life. It's a very difficult period for a lot of kids, for a lot of teens. And my message was simple. It was just that, like, as a teenager, you are not a lost cause. You are in between a child and an adult, and like, you're not yet grown up, but you still have the potential to do a lot of interesting and amazing things and make real world impact while you are still 13, 14, 15, 16. And we have a lot of real world examples of teenagers who have done great things. So it was very much an inspirational, uplifting story for teenagers around me, I think.
That's a pretty, like, I think that also shows that you have really good self-awareness to have that awareness of yourself, because you're a teenager when you wrote this too. And I want to dive deeper also into you being a teenager in high school and what that was like. I heard that you also had some pretty amazing outdoor adventures in high school. So would love to learn more and hear more about that.
Yeah, indeed I did. My school is amazing because they plan between like 4 to 8 trips each year. And so these trips are grade 6 to 12, and they're all about pushing kids to get into nature, get into the outdoors and do something outside their comfort zone while learning some leadership skills along the way. So through my high school, I have gone skiing, I've gone mountain climbing, I've gone river rafting, cycling, trekking, all sorts of amazing adventures. But two which really built my self-confidence personally was, and they were both in my last year of high school, 12th grade, where you're supposed to be more into academics, but I was off doing these things. One was in August 2022. The school organized a cycling trip from Manali to Leh, which are two cities in India. And so we cycled about 400 kilometers over 8 days on the national highway through the mountains in an absolutely beautiful and scenic route at an altitude. And so 3 months before, I wasn't, like, I would just be cycling around my community. I had never even cycled on a road before. But 3 months of good training, finding a really good coach, and then just doing a lot of cycling. And I finished the trip tired, so, but alive.
This is with your school. So there's like with other students who also were training and like doing this too. Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so I grew up in Canada. We don't have these crazy trips, but we have like an activities day in like elementary school. And this is, I was in a public school system. We had an activities day and they used to have skiing as an option on that day. Like you kind of choose what you want to do. Like there was cooking, dancing, like going skiing or whatever. And like one kid broke their arm and then we were never allowed to go skiing again. Okay, so that's how safe my school was. So it is mind-boggling to me when I hear things like, oh, you cycle 400 kilometers with your school. I'm like, that is amazing. That is a pretty special experience to have.
It was an amazing trip. And like more than finishing it, it was in 3 months, I set my mind to something. And I did something which I never thought I would have done. Like on day one, I was not able to cycle. I was like, I cycled like 10 kilometers and I was exhausted on the road.
Yeah.
And then during the trip, we were doing 40 to 60 kilometers a day and then doing uphills and downhills and going through, I think you call them like hairpin bends, which are shaped like a snake. So those are supposed to be super difficult roads to cycle on, but we did it together and, you know, we pulled each other up, we motivated each other, we listened to some good music along the way, and we all made it.
That's awesome. How many of you were there?
It was eight of us.
And wow. Like with a teacher?
Not exactly a teacher, but my school has some staff which all come from a military / mountaineering background.
Oh.
And so they are the ones who lead the trips. And so my two instructors were amazing people. One is actually, I think, going to attempt Mount Everest this year.
Oh,
and she's been collecting funding for that. And the other is a professional skier and he has amazing endurance and he's climbed a lot of peaks in Nepal. So they themselves are very inspiring people and they were like leading from the front.
That is insane. Do you still cycle now too, or is that kind of just like one and done?
I wish I had more time to cycle. I didn't cycle too much after the trip, to be honest. But I cycled to school a few times, which was fun. Me and my brother cycled to school a couple of days when we just felt like it. But I would love to get back to it. And there's a lot of cycling trips which happen in Hyderabad. And we just do a morning ride and then we have breakfast. And so there's a whole community of cyclists, which I really want to join. Hopefully over the summer break when I go back home.
And I know you had a second one too that you were going to talk about, another one of these amazing adventures. I know we were discussing a little bit beforehand, but you summited Mount Kilimanjaro. That is insane. That's also pretty amazing. How much training did that take?
I will say it's a doable hike. I am not an athlete. I'm not in the gym every single day. So I didn't think I could do it. I just signed up out of interest and said, I'll go do how much ever I can and then be very happy with myself. But I just love going on these treks. But so it's a doable mountain. There's no snow along the way. It's a short trek, long days, but a short trek overall. So it's about 4 to 5 days going up and then 1 to 2 days coming down.
To you. That's longer than anything I've done. So let's just say when Arya says short, it's not actually short. It's 4 days. That's insane. That's not short, okay? That's not the standard. That's above standard.
Got it. So yeah, it took again about 3 months of preparation. And so that was just a lot of like running, climbing up hills in my city. I should have been in San Francisco actually at that time. It would have been every day training whether I wanted to or not. But so climbing up hills in my city with like a backpack on me because I had to get used to like having a backpack and carrying my clothes and stuff. and a lot of cycling, some swimming, and that was it. And so that took a decent bit of my time. I was doing about, not a crazy amount, but I was doing about an hour a day, 6 days out of 7 of the week. So the trek went smoothly. The summit day was decently challenging, but I, again, made it exhausted, but alive. But it was just, again, a huge confidence booster. There's just something special about it because it was a beautiful trek. Again, I had a lot of support along the way. And it's cool to say that you summited the tallest mountain in Africa.
I also love how casual you are about this. Like, yeah, I just did it. I'm not an athlete. I just like cycled 400 kilometers and summited Mount Kilimanjaro, but no, I'm not an athlete. That's very doable. I was like, okay, you're being too humble here. You're setting the standard and the bar too high. This is not normal. Very impressive.
I honestly believe, though, that if you set your mind to anything, you can accomplish it within less time than you think. And so everyone is human. Like, no one was born and then the next day they went and summited Everest. It's just a lot of consistency and having your mind very clear on it. And visualizing was crucial to me. And that's something I continue to this day. Whenever I do my like nightly 10-minute meditation, just getting very clear in my head and seeing myself, let's say, on the summit or reaching the hotel in Leh after finishing the expedition. And so there were 101 things which could have gone wrong on both expeditions. Like, we were at altitude and we were physically exerting ourselves a lot. I feel like I was very fortunate to have made it. The visualizations really, really helped.
Yeah, that's a cool thing to do. Like, the 10-minute meditation at night, but you kind of imagine what success looks like to you, whatever that means that in your point in life. I'm going to try that. I like that. And that actually leads into my next question for you. So you've had all these amazing experiences. You're a published author. You had all these amazing excursions. What is a piece of advice or something that you've learned that has really stuck with you, that you live by?
So I think I'll give three pieces of advice and then connect them together. So number one, everything happens for a reason. Number two, low times create high times. And number three, flow with the flow. And so I'll connect this back to Mount Kilimanjaro, actually. So my first ever expedition was an expedition to Mount Fuji in Tokyo. Much more doable mountain, 2-day trek. Any decently fit person can just pack up their bags, go summit and come down and be very casual and humble about it. But that was a pretty rough trip for me overall, and things went bad one after the other. So first we lost our baggage at the airport.
Oh no.
And so we had to delay the trek a day or two. And then I didn't pack enough warm clothing. I was very underprepared. I didn't even look at the weather. And so I packed like 2 hoodies as if I was going to like a normal walk at night. And then I was freezing cold in the mountain, and then weather turned bad. So it started raining. And it became much more cold and much more difficult to just go along. Visibility became poor. So most of the students still made it. I was like 300 meters from the summit, which is like an hour-long walk. And I didn't make it. I stopped there and then I went back down with the rest of them. And so it hurt me a decent bit. As they were all celebrating and partying, I felt that I could have done it. I just gave up. And I didn't want to ever have that feeling again. And that actually was a big motivation for Mount Kilimanjaro, because it was January and like my 12th grade final IB exams were in May. Everyone thought I was insane to be going on a trip in January when I should have been studying. But I said, no, like, this is something I want to do, and this will make up twice over for Mount Fuji. So
yeah.
And then Kilimanjaro happened. And then I was very clear for Kilimanjaro that I will go as far as I can go. I'll not risk my safety or health, but I will go forward even if my body doesn't want to. And so low times create high times. Everything happens for a reason. And then flow with the flow, and just for the trip, it was long. I had to take permissions from the school. I had to give a few like exams earlier year or after the trip. My teachers were very upset with me. I had to catch up on 3 weeks of schoolwork, but I said, I will do everything and like flow with the flow. The more you resist things, the more they will persist. And some things are like, you need to do them. So I think what you resist persists. And so some things you, if you delay them 1 year, they will happen next year. Like they will come back into your life. And so I said that, no, I will do it now. Like there's no tomorrow.
Wow. I love that. What resists persists. That's my first time hearing that. I feel like you are already so wise for a first year student. You're definitely setting the standards very high, but you're also so humble about it. Like this is not normal. But I really appreciate you sharing that with us too. And with the Mount Fuji failure too, because honestly, I was like, hey, what can't this guy do? So it was cool to hear that too, and how you grew from that and decided to do like basically double a bit and said to yourself, you know, why not? Why not now? Let's just do it now or else, you know, it's going to persist in your head. So love that. That's amazing. All right, so we've talked about your past, we've talked about you growing up, now you're at Minerva. What's something that you're working on outside of Minerva, outside of school right now?
I will start by saying that Minerva probably takes up 95% of my time. So this is not an easy thing to do. And my classmates are amazing for doing like 10 different things outside of Minerva and running companies and doing amazing things. So we have a family venture called Serene Strokes, which I've been working pretty actively on. There's a lot of creativity within the family. So my younger brother also writes. My dad also writes. I write. My younger brother is a great artist. So he's into a lot of painting and doodling and pen and ink drawings. And so we wanted to kind of market all these works of art under one big umbrella. And a lot of the work has a lot of deep meaning and messages. So for example, my dad has written two novels. And so one is called The Parenting Flow. And it's a lot of his experiences, reflections, and insights from being a parent for like the last 17 years. Because parenting is something which no one has done before unless you... And then you just become a parent one day. And so a lot of like new parents had come to him for advice and... you know, like, what do I do with my kid? What classes do I put my kid in? And what does my kid major in college? And how do we get my child to put the phone down on the dinner table and have a conversation with me? There's a lot of struggles with parenting. And so he kind of compiled all of his insights into one book. And then the second book is Flow with the Flow, which is, again, the piece of advice which I mentioned. He's a big believer in that. And that was more about life in general and how we can flow with the flow and say yes to things rather than persisting and saying no and creating obstacles for ourselves and like setting up too many walls around our life and be more open to possibility and growth and change. So those are his two works. My younger brother, he has done a lot of nature artworks. He has done a lot of doodling. And so, and even I... from time to time write some more spiritual short pieces and some more spiritual poetry. So we wanted to share all this with the world and like make it available to people. So we have a website, serenestrokes.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. And we do weekly postings to try and spread awareness about these works and encourage people to reach out to us. We're always happy to share soft copies with anyone, regardless of whether they want to buy it from us or not, because all the money goes to charity. We don't take it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working on that. I've been trying to see what more content we can create and how we can grow on social media and spread the word to more people, because I think that while that benefits us, it benefits the more lives we touch, it benefits those people as well. Because I feel like we have good content and it just needs to be marketed much better. Mm. And so I'm currently trying to work on how we can crack this social media game, which I think everyone wants to do, every brand and business and person wants to do, but how we can, what to post, how to design it, and like what would spread it like crazy on social media. And so that's what I've been working on.
Very cool. So basically your entire family is just incredible. So it seems like you already have kind of found what you're good at and what you're passionate about, creative writing. So I'm curious, at Minerva, is that also the path that you are planning to follow? Or I know you're still in first year, but you strike me as someone who has a lot of like purpose and like thought into an intention into what you do and why. So I'm curious, like, what are you planning to do at Minerva?
That's the toughest question. The whole of the last week, I've been struggling with that because we recently submitted our major declaration forms and I changed about 3 or 4 times. Finally, I settled on social sciences. And so I'm not sure about the exact concentration, but ideally it would be a combination of courses in economics and psychology. And then I want to leave room for a good amount of arts and humanities electives because I love philosophy, history, and literature. And I also want to build some... I'm not the most technical person. There's amazing tech whizzes here at Minerva, but I want to build some CS skills. So some courses in computer science. And so I have a few like different things which I will be doing after Minerva. And so I'm just trying to see how I can, more than build knowledge, build a broader like skill set and learn more from different subject areas rather than concentrating on just one. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And eventually, especially the economics and psychology will help me a decent amount with my creative writing, with my podcasts, with digital marketing and social media. And we have a family business, which I'm super keen to run with my father and my grandfather someday. And so that will help as well.
Wow. So it sounds like you have a lot going on. I am so fascinated by what your capstone is going to turn out to be in fourth year. Because honestly, it sounds like you've already, like, I mean, people have written books for their caps, but you've already done that. So I'm excited to see how you tie all these different things together. Because it sounds kind of like business, social science, some CS, but also like arts and humanities. I can see why you've been flipping back and forth. But super curious to see, like, a couple of years from now, you should do like a follow-up interview, like Aria part 2, to see what you...
Love it.
...person you become through Minerva as well. All right. So I know we are getting close to the end of our time on this podcast. I feel like I could talk to you for like hours. You have so many interesting stories. But it is now time for our fast fire round of questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Night or morning?
5 a.m. over midnight any day.
Oh my gosh. Do you really wake up at 5 a.m. every day?
Not at Minerva, but I used to. And I would love to get back to it. But it's just not happening.
Yeah, I'm like, how are you doing that? Okay, be embarrassed or be afraid?
Embarrassed, I think. Because I think fear is a paralyzer. And it really stops you from like going forward. So I would rather be embarrassed. And that will eventually go away, ideally.
What's your favorite book genre?
Ooh, historical fiction.
Okay. And what's your spirit fruit?
I think it would have to be a mango. I would be a disgrace to Indian culture if I didn't say mangoes. 4 months over the summer, we eat mangoes every single day. And we drink mango juice and they are delicious.
I love mangoes. I would agree with you there. And lastly, what is your word of the day?
Serendipity.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. All right, let's wrap up this episode. What's the best way for our audience to reach you if they want to connect or have follow-up questions?
Ooh, please mail me on Arya, A-R-Y-A, @groupwelkin.com. That's my email. That's my personal email. Always check that.
All right. Thank you so much for being on the show, Arya. It was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. And I'm very excited to see and listen to the episodes that you're going to host soon.
Oh, yeah. I'm super looking forward to it. And this has been a lovely conversation. Thank you so much.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and automatically get notified about new episodes on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at humansandminerva.podcast for all the latest updates and announcements. And finally, special thanks to our editor, Aang Lilian, for working her magic on this episode. Thanks for listening to Humans of Minerva.